Hey, y'all, Scott here. Here's how to support the show. Patreon.com/ScottHortonShow if you want to donate per interview. And also ScottHorton.org/donate. Anyone who donates $20 gets a copy of the audiobook of Fool's Errand. Anyone who donates $50, that'll get you a signed copy of the paperback in the mail there. And anyone who donates $100 gets either a QR code commodity disc or a lifetime subscription, now only for $100, not two, a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks, libertarian audiobooks, listenandthink.com there. So check out all that stuff. And of course, we take all your different digital currencies, especially Zencash and all the different kinds of Bitcoins and whatevers are all there at scotthorton.org/donate. And get the book, Fool's Errand. And give it a good review on Amazon if you read it and you liked it, and review the show on iTunes and Stitcher and that kind of thing if you want. All right, thanks.
Sorry I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
It's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
But we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, bitch, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, introducing the great Philip Weiss. He keeps this wonderful website, MondoWeiss.net. Mondo Weiss, and he's got this great group of writers over there, and Phil writes great stuff every day. You got to sign up for their morning email. This is how I start my morning every morning. Why are you like this, Scott Horton? Well, I start my morning every morning reading Mondo Weiss while I drink my coffee and complain on Twitter about it. And it's just the best stuff. And it's, I think, to oversimplify, because the staff of writers there is broader than this. But at the core, this is American liberal Jewish X or anti-Zionism, basically. That's what Mondo Weiss represents, conscience on the issue of Israel-Palestine from a liberal American Jewish point of view. So welcome back to the show. I'm so happy to have you here, Phil, and welcome back to America, because you just are coming back from Israel and or Palestine, correct?
That's right, Scott, I am. Thank you for the plug too. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think I came to this just to be hat tip you and your listeners, you know, chiefly as an American, you know, and then during the wars, and then later discovered that, yeah, I'm Jewish. I mean, the Jewish part is important, and the liberal part, that's part of it, progressive, whatever you want to call it. But chiefly, you know, this is an American issue, that, and that's where you and I just have complete agreement. And that's why we've been so friendly over the years, and why your book is important, so important too, Fool's Errand. I mean, that's about an American interest.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I saw an interview with that professor from Northeastern University, Max Abrams, who's been really great on Syria all this time. And I saw an interview of him, I think it was on an Israeli news show. It may not have been an Israeli show. It was some European news show or something over there in the old world anyway. And they go, yeah, but you know, Israel's interest is this, that, and the other thing. And Max Abrams is like, well, yeah, but I'm an American. And so my interest is opposition to Al-Qaeda, like full stop. I don't know what to tell you, Israel. Yeah. Sorry, but I don't know why you would put it to me that way, lady, but I'm from the USA, you know?
That's great. That's great. Yeah.
All right. So where you been and what'd you see?
Well, I went to Israel for the new embassy. I wanted to see the embassy open or get as close as I could to it. And then I wanted to get as close to the Gaza border as I could. Again, I had trouble getting close. The Israeli officials don't want press mucking around there. But I was there on the day that Israel slaughtered 62 people at the Gaza fence, and also shot that day. They shot 1,360 Palestinians. Another 400 were injured by shrapnel, and they say this was they were absolutely scientific about who they were targeting. It's horse manure. That was you know, a historic day in Palestine. That massacre. It goes in a long series of Israeli massacres, but it certainly reflects the fact that Israel does not have a clue how to deal with its minority or majority non-Jewish population. And that is fundamentally the problem with Israel, is they've never had a clue what to do with the non-Jewish population except push them out. And now they've got a one-state apartheid situation, and it's becoming this is the prayerful part on my part. It's becoming more and more evident to the world that that's the case.
Yeah. You know, I saw a friend on Twitter said the only silver lining of this series of massacres here at the Gaza fence is that the Israelis have accidentally, you know, out of context, been forced to admit that that's a border.
Uh-huh.
And that this is, you know, in other words, this should be independent territory, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If they had had they should have grabbed the two-state solution when they had a chance, and they didn't. They were greedy. They wanted more land with fewer Palestinians on it, and so now they control the entire territory between the river and the sea. It is one state. Let's just acknowledge that. More and more realists in America are acknowledging it's one state. It's apartheid. They got what they wanted. They don't believe in democracy. They believe in a Jewish state. So. But, you know, and I think that when your friend speaks of the silver lining, I want to emphasize the fact that there are a lot of brave, brave people in Gaza who dared to go up to that fence and dared to demand their right to return to their villages. And in doing so, expose themselves to murderous violence. And I couldn't do that. And by doing that, they have, I think, affected world opinion, affected the American view of this conflict, and maybe woken up some Jews too, who I believe are so crucial to changing the American understanding of this.
Mm. Well, so I guess I'm not as familiar about what all was said and negotiated during the 1970s, you know, between 67 and 79. But at Camp David, part of the deal was in making peace with Egypt and Jordan there. I think it was both, right? Was that they were going to allow for there to be an independent Palestinian state as well. And then you had, I don't know if Oslo was supposedly on that same chain of peace process or Oslo was supposed to be a fresh new start, but this was what they all agreed that they would work on in what was it, 1992 there? So what's the problem?
Well, you're right that Sadat only signed the Camp David Accords because there was Palestinian language in there. There was Palestinian autonomy, I believe, was what the Israelis whittled it down to. But that was a commitment that he had to have before he would normalize his relations with Israel. Jordan, I think, said the same thing later in the 90s. But, yeah, I mean, Oslo was on the table since Palestinians made it a central concession in 1988, saying that they would accept a state, indicating they would accept a state on 22% of historical Palestine. And so that affirmation was reaffirmed by the Arab states in 2000. So from 1988 to 2000, you had a very firm commitment from the Palestinian and Arab side that they wanted this conflict to end with a Palestinian sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And Israel is, you know, I mean, we all can see what's happened. Israel has just continued to build settlements inside the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And so that's occupied. The Golan is occupied. They want the whole land. That's what they want. They got it. The government coalition is dominated now by right-wing and religious parties that are committed to one Israel. They even speak of tearing down the Al-Aqsa Mosque, some of them, these crazies, and putting up a third temple. So that is the greatest achievement, I think, of Israel in the West, is that it has hoodwinked the American mainstream about the true nature of their designs in the state. Americans have very little idea how right-wing Israel is.
And you're not talking about TV brainwashed, brain-dead Americans. You're talking about Washington, D.C. and the deals they've made with the people who are in charge of this place here.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. In Washington, that's the place where there should be some awareness. And, you know, you have the Israel lobby working 24/7 to give Israel a beautiful image in Washington and to say, we just want peace. And it's just not true. And that, it seems to me, is the miracle. You know, people talk about the miracle of Israel. The miracle is Hasbara. The miracle is the brainwashing that's happened over here to tell us, to assert that this is a liberal democracy or a, quote, Jewish democracy. What's a Jewish democracy? You know, in Pakistan, there, you know, that's a Muslim state. And, you know, you have to. You can't eat in public during Ramadan right now. It's all straightforward. In Israel, it's the same kind of business. It's intolerance towards any minority. So it's a religious state, and it's not a democracy.
Well, and, you know, I try to be as generous as I can to, you know, the other side's point of view when it comes to, you know, the American people and what they believe. And yes. I really don't have any other option but to agree with what you said, that they really just don't understand it at all. I mean, when I hear the arguments for Israel here, it's always as though Palestine is the country next door that is attempting to invade and attack Israel. And, you know, if Mexico sent their hordes to invade the United States like this, we would have to attack Mexico or whatever, even though that's a really poor analogy. You know, this is an Indian reservation. It's not Mexico.
Exactly.
You know, it's not that country next door. It's not Jordan.
It's no parody.
These Palestinians, they lost their war and were conquered in 1967. And yet, but the other side of this argument doesn't understand that. They don't ever say, look, I know that it's an occupation ever since 67 and this and that. However, no, there's no acknowledgement of the reality of the situation at all. They really believe that the Palestinians are the dominant threatening force, or at least the threatening one, and that poor little Israel's just trying to defend themselves from aggression.
Right. But, I mean, I guess we arrive at a question of who's to blame. And, you know, I would point out that even on, like, national public radio in the last couple of days, they refer to Hamas as this horrible threat to America. And, why do people believe this stuff? You know, can we blame the Israel lobby entirely? Yeah, I think we can blame them largely, but there's also a degree of, you know, the ignorance in our country about international affairs is pretty profound. And, you know, the American people have made some pretty big foreign policy mistakes, misled by their leaders, but they've gone along with a lot of this stuff. And, you know, it fills me. I guess I have some despair about the ability to change public opinion on this stuff. I mean, the American people voted for George W. Bush in 2004. How much information did you need about how incompetent that guy was?
Yeah. Well, but look at who he was up against.
I agree.
These things happen.
Yeah, they do happen.
Well, but this brings up, you know, some of the stuff that you've been writing about lately that actually is pretty optimistic. I've really liked to see where you're saying that you think that Trump's nature and his alliance with Adelson and Netanyahu and his actions on Jerusalem and on the Iran deal have really helped to make Israel much more of a partisan issue. And so talk a little bit about that, because I think that if that's really true, then maybe there's a little bit of, you know, some cracks in the narrative that can, you know, the common narrative can be shown here, too. If people have to fight about it, they're going to have to explain their position a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair to the American people, I think out there, there are a lot of people who understand how oppressive Israel is. You know, I run into people all the time, ordinary people like myself. And they don't have a lot of information. They have enough to know that Israel is completely out of line. And it is the elites and it is the political establishment that is driving the narrative here. Now, the great thing is that in the past, the Israel lobby had a policy that we are absolutely bipartisan. We work on both parties so that whoever gets into power, there is no daylight between the United States and Israel's government. Well, that bipartisan, you know, kind of a wallpaper and fence post to fence post control of the political establishment is changing and breaking up a little because Trump is so aligned with Netanyahu that and the right wing of Israel that the left wing of the Israel lobby in the United States is saying, we don't like Trump. We don't like these policies. We don't know how we feel about the embassy. And even the Gaza thing, well, they may have killed too many people. They were unrestrained. So right now you have a right-wing lobby, which is all for Israel all the way in the Republican Party and Trump. And you have a left-wing lobby that is saying, well, Israel needs to pull back its settlements a little and grab the two-state solution while it can't, you know, because that's the only thing that'll save Israel. So you have the lobby split and at each other's throats. And there's hope that once that fight begins in earnest and people actually start to argue about Israel, remember in 2016, the largest criticism we had of Israel in the whole political process was when Bernie Sanders said in the New York primary against Hillary Clinton, you know, sometimes we have to be able to say that Netanyahu is not always right. You know, so you had a sort of a, you know, hushed criticism of Israel by Bernie Sanders that was brave, but that's where it ended. Hillary and Trump did not disagree over Israel. This time, in this cycle, there is a hope that Democrats on the progressive left will be saying, hey, what the heck is it with this Israel? We do not support this. This is not American values. We are spending too much of American capital, both in terms of actual material resources and our image around the world on this apartheid state. We say no. And so I anticipate that some candidates on the Democratic left will say that, and that in 2020, it might even be an issue in the presidential race. So slowly, those cracks are appearing. Are they going to help save Palestinian lives? Are they going to help save the two-state solution? I don't think so. I think it's a really bad time for Palestinians. Right now, a friend of mine wrote me last night, look at the plans for the Museum of Tolerance in Jerusalem that some big Israel lobby organization is building on my great-grandfather's grave. A Muslim cemetery in Jerusalem is the site of Simon Wiesenthal Center's Museum of Tolerance. So complete intolerance on the part of Israel towards its Muslim and Palestinian citizens, and it just keeps getting worse.
I mean, man. I know that example too. It sounds like something just made up. I remember when I first read about that years ago, where they literally bulldozed this cemetery, this at least hundreds years old cemetery East Jerusalem, to build a museum of tolerance. In other words, a museum of Israeli Jewish victimhood.
Right.
And in East Jerusalem on Palestinian, on a confiscated Palestinian graveyard, a monument to boohoo for us.
Yeah, that's it. And although I would say it is in West Jerusalem. It's on the other side of the Green Line, but big deal. You know,
okay,
it doesn't matter. No, but
it ain't their cemetery to bulldoze, that's for sure.
Yeah. And those people don't count. It's because those people don't count. Don't say it's democracy. Those people have no political power. So, yeah, and it's boohoo for us.
I mean, seriously, a museum of tolerance. How about a little bit of tolerance for people who are Palestinian Christians and Muslims? And actually, that's their property. How about some tolerance for them?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, Scott, the one other thing, though, I'd say about when we were talking about the lobby, the one good piece of news or another interesting piece of news that is coming onto the landscape right now is that you may have seen that the Mueller investigation is starting to look into other foreign influences on the election and on the political parties besides this big deal Russian whatever it was meddling, who knows what the heck it was. And you know, I saw that story,
but I'll tell you, that's going nowhere, man.
The Russian one or the Israeli one?
Yeah, they're not going to go that way. But I was surprised to even see that in the New York Times, though. That I'm sorry. Actually, now that you mention it, let me make sure I got this right, because I guess I'm not sure. Did the story say that the Mueller investigation is looking at the Israel angle, or just that was one of the things that was brought to their attention or something?
I think that your cynicism is absolutely correct, and they're not going to do anything with it. But just as the last piece of Russian influence that was documented, which was Mike Flynn's lying to the FBI about what he had done in during the transition in 2016. Just as that lie exposed Israel's influence, Mike Flynn was lying about the fact that he was trying to get the Russians to sandbag that anti-settlements resolution at the UN Security Council. So Israel's influence was patent then. Israel's influence is again patent in the latest disclosures about what Mueller's looking into. Now, as you say, he's not going to touch the Israel influence part, but it's clear that this guy, Elliot Broidy, who's a, you know, a giant fundraiser on the Republican side and had access to the White House, Broidy's game was working, was sort of influence peddling with Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Mm-hmm. He was about to make millions on a contract to represent them in Washington because he has, and to demonize Qatar. Well, that was his game, but this is a guy who's, Broidy, who's worked for Israel, who's been an Israel lobbyist for a long time, has been involved with the Republican Jewish Coalition, which is only concerned with Israel, an organization that has connections to Sheldon Adelson, an organization whose head, Norm Coleman, just accepted the $30 million donation from Adelson to the Congressional Leadership Fund. So you have this kind of organization, the Republican Jewish Coalition, which supports Israel, which is basically an Israel lobby front. I mean, Israel lobby organization in Washington that is sort of the clearinghouse for a lot of influence on the Trump administration. And Broidy, a former, you know, finance guy with the RNC and a board member of the Republican Jewish Coalition, is under the scopes of Mueller for influence peddling with Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, but he's obviously doing it for Israel too. So whether that will ever become an issue politically, you know, we can hope. I doubt, of course, it will be criminalized in any fashion.
Hey, let me tell you about the sponsors of this show. First of all, Mike Swanson. He is the author of the great book, The War State, about the permanence of America's World War II military empire through the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy administrations, the rise of the new right military-industrial complex after World War II, The War State by Mike Swanson, and also get his great investment advice to protect your financial future there at WallStreetWindow.com. He has a great understanding of what the hell is going on in these financial markets. WallStreetWindow.com. Unless I know, he'll tell you, you got to have at least some of your savings. You must know. Some of your savings, however much it is, you got to have metals. And so what you do is you go to Roberts and Roberts Brokerage Inc., gold, silver, platinum, palladium. They have a very small brokerage fee in order to process for you and get you the very best deal. And if you buy with Bitcoin, there's no premium at all for your purchases of gold, silver, platinum, palladium. So check those guys out. Roberts and Roberts Brokerage Inc. at rrbi.co. You ever play baseball? rrbi.co. And as I mentioned, Zencash is a great new digital currency. It's also an encrypted method of internet messaging and document transfer and all kinds of things for your business, for your secret conspiracies. Zencash.com. Check that out at zensystem.io. You can read all about how it works, every last detail, of course, at zensystem.io. And then there's this book about how to run your technology business like a libertarian. It's called No Dev, No Ops, No IT. And each of those is one word, three words, you know, get it? Yeah. No Dev, No Ops, No IT. It's by Hussein Badakhshani, and it's about how to run your business right in a libertarian way. LibertyStickers.com. I guess Rick didn't like the great new website, so we'll have to wait. Someday we'll get a new website. There's still a lot of good stickers on there, but we've got a lot of good art that's not up there yet. I don't know, man. LibertyStickers.com. That's the new slogan. I don't know. And Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom. If you like learning things, I'll get a commission if you sign up by way of the link on my website. And listen, if you want a new, and the reason my website is down is my own broken servers, but if you want a new good-looking website like the one I do have when it's up and running at scotthorton.org, then check out expanddesigns.com/scott, expanddesigns.com/scott, and you will save $500 on your new website. Now, so I guess when it comes to, you know, on the American political side here, in terms of opinion changing, because yes. I think, you know, like you said, and I think this is really true starting in 2014, maybe it had already started to be true, but certainly in the 2014 slaughter, the Palestinians finally got to have their, you know, 3G camera phone pictures retweeted, yeah. And the yes. American people got to see their side of the story yes. for the first time ever and took their side, you know, barely, but still, that seemed to be like a real change there. And, you know, there's a generational change and all these things, but I'm interested in this split in the Democratic Party, because the way you've characterized it a lot of times, which seems pretty fair to me, is that it's the older and the moneyed interests behind the Democratic Party who are basically might as well be Sheldon Adelson themselves versus yes. basically all the rank and file Democratic voters.
Yes.
You know, all the political activists, the progressives and the liberal, even the liberals, yes. But yes. especially the progressives and the those to the further left than them. And this even came down, was it in 2012 in LA where they had this big fight where the pro-Palestinian vote, obviously the ayes have it, and they just, the leadership just lied up there and pretended that the nays had won on this resolution.
That's right.
So there's a there is a change coming there, you think, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, look, from time immemorial, for the last 30 years, the progressive elements of the Democratic Party, and here I would cite especially the Black Caucus, left the hard left, and, you know, people of color have been on the Palestinian side. And in the Democratic base, what has kept them from actually getting their views into the platform? I mean, you see the platform as a fluid document on things like, you know, freedom of transgender individuals, on gay rights generally, on feminist issues, on the death penalty. The Democratic Party reflects its base on those issues. On this issue, it never has. And the reason is American Jews. American Jews are very important in the Democratic Party, and they're very important as fundraisers in the Democratic Party. At J Street a couple of years ago, Emily's List, you know, which is gets Democratic candidates to up to speed and helps recruit them. And a leader of Emily's List said the amount of Jewish money in the Democratic side is gigantic. And J.J. Goldberg of The Forward says it's shocking if you knew how much of the leading money inside the most important donors inside the Democratic Party are Jewish. So that's a reality. And so what I hope for is what we're seeing is a generational shift where older Jews are wed to Zionism because of the Holocaust, or because of that was the Jewish religion, was Zionism in the last 50 years. And young Jews are saying no mas. And so that, I think, is the great change that's happening. And that's the shift we're seeing. And that is going to free the that is going to end this break inside the Democratic Party on supporting Palestinian rights. And we see, I mean, increasingly, that's what my website in some ways, or I reflect, is that shift inside Jewish opinion, where the young people are saying, hey, this is outrageous. We don't feel that we are one. I have a book. I'm looking at a book right on my bookshelves right now by Melvin Yourofsky that characterized the Jewish view of Israel and American Jews through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000. We are one. Young Jews don't feel that way. And so, yes, I'm parochial. You know, we always have this conversation on the show, and some viewers or listeners are sometimes critical of me for being so parochial. And sectarian, and looking at the Jewish community is so important. But I do so because I really think that's where the power is to politicize this question. On the right, maybe it's a different question. Maybe you have the evangelicals. I accept that, or who are a factor. But Sheldon Adelson's a bigger factor. So even there, Jews are very important on the right. And so I chronicle every jot and tittle of change inside the American Jewish community. And I think it's happening, and I think it's going to free up our political process.
Yeah. And look, I mean, for people who are skeptical or coming at this from a much more pro-Israel point of view,
right?
I mean, these are not anti-Semitic tropes or anything. Sheldon Adelson is a real man with a real pile of money. And with, well, tell us about Sheldon Adelson and what he, what you know about what he thinks about Israel.
Well, Sheldon Adelson has said, I wish I hadn't served in the American army. I wish I had served in the Israeli army. He has said that Obama should nuke Iran. He's, I was sitting there in, what was it, 2015 or 2014 at Yeshiva University in New York when he said, we ought to fire a nuclear bomb at Iran and say, you keep this up and we're going to level your, do it in the desert first, then we'll do it in your cities. So this, and in 2000, Sheldon Adelson was outraged by the peace process and was involved in an organization called One Jerusalem and gave a whole lot of money to the Republican Party and to George W. Bush. And Bush took his policy from Sheldon Adelson in 2000. And that's why there were so many neoconservatives in his administration. One reason was that he needed the money from Sheldon Adelson. And why is John Bolton now our national security advisor? He's a favorite of Sheldon Adelson. And Sheldon Adelson just cut a check for $30 million to the Congressional Leadership Fund on the Republican side. He handed it to Norm Coleman. Paul Ryan was there when the deal went down, but he had to hand the check to Norm Coleman, I guess, to preserve some official niceties. But so this man does not want Jerusalem divided, and lo, Jerusalem is not divided. He wanted the embassy moved. The embassy's been moved. I think we really have to regard our transactional president, Donald Trump, as working very well with a very transactional guy, the casino mogul Sheldon Adelson, and Adelson is getting what he wanted. And the failure to point this out on the front page of the New York Times or front page of the Washington Post and the claims that the Iran deal was destroyed because of Trump's rivalry with Obama, surely a factor, but that mainstream analysts leave out the fact that Sheldon Adelson is trying to save the Republican Party in the coming midterm elections, which is obviously crucial to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest factor involved.
Well, and of course, I mean, one might argue that, hey, listen, he donates so much because he wants Congress to outlaw every form of gambling that competes with his casinos, of course, because he's a rent seeker, just like the rest of these people, you know?
Yes.
I don't mean Jews.
Yeah.
I mean rich businessmen of all backgrounds.
Yes, of course.
And so, you know, but that's not really it, right? He's not just some guy with an opinion about nuking Iran, but this is where his politics lie, and this is what he lobbies for and has at the center of his interest, alongside outlawing online gambling and whatever else he can, right?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even looked into his gambling interest that much because obviously it's there. But when the media only talk about the gambling interest, they're overlooking what is clearly front and center to him. I mean, you watch interviews with this guy. He believes in the need for Israel. He believes in the ideals of Israel. He believes that Israel is a great democracy. These are things he genuinely believes. He's devoted to Israel. And so you got to take him at his word. And so, and he has the whole kind of alarmist view of sort of Jewish existence that helped bring about the state of Israel in the first place and that fostered the rise of the Israel lobby. He really thinks that there's existential threats to Israel from Iran. Israel has 200 nuclear weapons. Iran has none. I mean, he just believes the hype and the propaganda, and he's very close to Netanyahu, who, of course, has manipulated the United States to a fairly well. And, you know, that's where the foreign policy is being made right now on this question. It's being
made
by
Israel. I've even had Israelis email me before and say, you know, it's your fault we're stuck with Netanyahu anyway, because it's Americans who bankroll Likud. It's Americans who bankroll, it's Sheldon Adelson who bankrolls this newspaper that's the most widely read newspaper in Israel that he just gives away for free. He takes it as a loss to promote Likud, and that if foreigners, meaning American diaspora Jews, were not allowed to intervene in Israeli elections, things might be different and better.
That's true. Although, you know, I just have to say, Scott, I mean, this goes to theories of public opinion again, on which I'm pretty cynical, but I was just in Israel, and, you know, I interviewed people on the street about the slaughter. The day that they shot, you know, they shoot 1,360 people, killing 60 of them, you know, with live fire, unarmed demonstrators. And I interviewed Israelis on the street in Jerusalem about this. And, you know, 20 people refused to talk. They don't trust the international media. I get that. 20 talked to me. And just every one of them was for this. Everyone said, we did the right thing. And I almost got thrown out of my, I was in an Airbnb, and a woman half my age who was my host suddenly starts yelling at me that I hate myself and I don't have the full picture to be criticizing Israel. These people are fully behind a policy of massacring unarmed protesters. And, you know, I'd like to blame Sheldon Adelson for that. I'd love to blame Americans bankrolling Netanyahu. But that society is like a cult. It's like a right-wing militarist Sparta cult. And for 70 years, it has not been able to figure out its Palestinian problem. And the result has been that these people are lesser human beings. They don't count. We're going to build museums of tolerance on their graveyards and, you know, screw off.
You know what? When Max Blumenthal, our mutual friend Max Blumenthal, was over there riding Goliath back years ago, I remember interviewing him, and he was just, this society is so far gone. You have no idea. The entire place is far to the right of what we call Republicans in our culture, man. There.
Yes.
And like you said, too, I think he may have even used the C word cult for the mindset there, that worse than the worst kind of right-wing kooks here.
That's interesting. And
right-wing kooks come in pretty kooky flavors here. Now, one more thing real quick, and I'm sorry, I know you got to go, but can you talk a little bit about David Rothkopf? This is a guy who's the former editor of foreignpolicy.com, and I know him as being kind of a frustrating center-right Hillaryite on the Iran deal, which I wish he had supported better and things like this. But you have some quotes of this guy, and you seem to think that he's really a thermometer for, you know, elite intellectual kind of centrist opinion on this issue, and Jewish opinion on this issue.
Yeah, I'd throw in Jewish too. Yeah, I mean, obviously this guy's an elite leader in any case, regardless of his religion. But, and this is a guy, you know, he was indoctrinated in the Zionist cause as a young man. His roommate was Michael Oren at Columbia many, many years ago. Michael Oren, the propagandist for Israel and their ambassador, a guy who moved from the United States to Israel because he felt he was unsafe in the United States. Anti-Semitism was going to hurt him. Well, David Rothkopf and is someone also who trashed Walton Mearsheimer in the worst way when they published in 2006. And what we've seen from him over the recent years are more and more anti-Zionist statements about what is the Jewish state doing? Why is the Jewish state doing this? And disavowing a lot of what Israel has done. And he was outraged, as any human being should be, by Israel's treatment of unarmed protesters, and said, they were threatening the fence. Weren't there alternatives to shooting them with live fire, shooting 1,400 people? So should we be congratulating someone for reaching those conclusions? Of course not. I mean, these are obvious conclusions. Any human being should reach them. But I think that it's significant that Rothkopf, who is, in the mainstream, a lot of people follow him in the establishment, and he's had it. You see more and more sort of he's giving up on the Jewish state, and I wouldn't be surprised if he declares himself to be an anti-Zionist soon. And again, I think that's important, that we have this ideology that is in a decadent phase. It's worse than what communism had become. I mean, in terms of being discredited. Communism was in the 50s. It was a worn-out ideology. It had failed may have been great on paper. Zionism has completely failed in delivering on what it said it was going to do. And I think that's more and more evident to anyone who's fair-minded, including you and me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like my old buddy Darren's bumper sticker. He used to say, denial keeps me loyal. And once you break through that, go ahead.
Wow. Wow.
I don't know, take a tab of acid or something, do something to kind of think of things different for a minute, and you'll see right through, and things got to change. It can't be like this, and more and more people are definitely coming around, and to a great degree in this society, that's because of your great work, Phil, so thank you again.
But Scott, one quick question of you before we go.
Sure.
You know those word clouds they do on the internet that shows what emphasis stuff has, and, you know, and... You know, bigger words, smaller words, there's a big cloud of words. Mm-hmm. How, in your worldview of American, well, in your view of American foreign policy, you look at a lot of factors. How important do you think, and, you know, you put me on generously, you know, every couple of months or so, or every few months, when something has happened, but how important to you is Israel-Palestine in terms of American foreign policy? I mean, you have a broader, I have television.
I mean, in my own opinion, I mean, I think it's, God, it's just the hugest thorn in the side of everything, man.
Uh-huh,
it's horrible.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, and of course, because of Israel's role in America's problems with Iran, too. You know, I know you know that back in the 1990s, we didn't have to have the dual containment policy from bases in Saudi Arabia provoking bin Ladenite terrorist attacks against the U.S. We could have made peace with Saddam and with the Ayatollah in the 1990s and just said, well, whatever, we're the dominant faction around here and you guys are going to have to find a way to get along in our order. And they would have accepted that in circa 1993. Why not? But instead, the policy, you know, Martin Indyk and all the Israel lobbies, all the guys from WinEP in Bill Clinton's government said, no, sirree, we got to stay in Saudi to dual contain these two enemy states. It's crazy, you know. Yeah, and I could go on and on and on. No.
Yes.
To me, it's everything. Yeah. And look, it's why Ramzi Youssef attacked the World Trade Center, and it's why his uncle Khalid Sheikh Mohammed attacked the World Trade Center. How about that for an answer?
Beautiful, man. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And I know you've pointed that out to me before, and I thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, and you know what? Honestly, man, look at what we're going through right now with this Jerusalem thing. I mean, this is a huge thing. Ayman al-Zawahiri just put out, you know, the butcher of New York City, who's still on the loose out there, hiding in a basement in Pakistan somewhere, I guess, just put out a podcast the other day. You know, rally all forces and this and that and the other thing. What a great talking point for the enemy as America's given what was supposed to be an international city where, you know, I was just reading about this the other day where it would have, it would be binational in terms of the national control over it, but would it have one municipal, non-sectarian government to be in charge of the city kind of thing? Let a Jewish Israeli and a Palestinian Muslim trade places or whatever every few years, something to make it work like that, which would have been fair and would have worked out. Because after all, these holy sites are holy to, you know, Christians, Jews, and Muslims all together. So.
Yeah, and
why not share
Zionist
it and get along instead of trying to keep it from each other, you know?
No, we will not have sovereignty over the Holy Basin. BS.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned this earlier, and it sounds crazy, but this is really a thing, and I don't know how strong it is in Israeli politics, right? But this is a thing where there's a certain movement that wants to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque and build a third temple and start sacrificing animals, right? Which would be world war at that point.
Yeah, I don't think. I think the likelihood of that is far less than even a war with Iran. I mean, but
that's good.
Which, you know, you don't think is going to happen.
No, I mean, I agree with that, too. It seems to be kind of a winger issue. But then again, the wingers seem to be running things. So I don't
know. That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I mean, there are members of Knesset on the members of their parliament on the right wing side who are dedicated to that cause. Now, they're just a few and they're wing nuts and they don't. And Netanyahu keeps them at a distance, I believe. But. Yeah, I mean,
there's some Hagiites, you know, some right wing evangelicals in America who are really into this too. You know, there was a column by Raimondo back years ago, Justin Raimondo, called "Beware the Red Heifer," where these Texas ranchers were trying to genetically engineer a pure red heifer,
that
would be the loophole in the prophecy, where either you have to wait around for Jesus to come back, or if you have a red heifer, you can go ahead and cheat and start going now, right?
Yes, yes, yes. That's great. And that place would be dripping with blood, you know, animal sacrifices, you said.
Can you imagine? Jesus. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
I better let you go. I know you have to go, but I love talking with you, Phil, and I love all your work, and I'm a huge fan of all your guys, too.
Okay.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye. All right, you guys. That's the great Philip Weiss. He's at MondoWeiss.net. MondoWeiss.net, the Mondo Weiss blog, and follow him on Twitter, Phil Weiss on Twitter, and also Mondo Weiss as well. All right, so you guys know the deal. FoolsErrand.us for the book, ScottHorton.org, and YouTube.com/ScottHortonShow for all the interviews, 4,500 of them now, going back to 2003 for you there. Read what I want you to read at antiwar.com and at libertarianinstitute.org, and follow me on Twitter at ScottHortonShow. Thanks.